Christopher Sparrow from iTechGear.org, and this is the iTech Gear Weekly, episode number 18, Great Googly Moogly.
Yeah.
Recorded Sunday, May 15th, 2022.
Jeez. Can't top that.
As I said, I am Christopher
Chief
over at iTechGear.org, and joining me today, one of the quiet ones, Mr. Larry McJunkin. Welcome back, sir. How are you today?
Yeah, quiet my tail. I'm just very happy to be here, but I liked your original Farmer McGoogle better.
Old McGoogle had a show.
There's a lot to get excited about.
I owe.
Yes. So also joining us today, former contributing writer over at Gear Diary, currently the host of the Linux Link Tech Show, and living in the shade of the 80s arcade podcast, Mr. Joel McLaughlin. How are you, brother Joel?
I am doing great. And yesterday, I you would have thunk I would have been at a retro game convention before, but no. Saturday was my first one.
Well, okay.
And I had a wonderful time. And we can talk about that a little later.
Did you run one of the t-shirt with your podcast name on it? You really should have.
No, I got to do that next year. I really do. I did get a game. So,
and there, of course, last but certainly never the least, is Mr. Chris Cavula, former contributing editor over at Gear Diary and Pocket Now. Hello, Chris.
I'm done. That's it.
Hello, Newman.
So sad. How are you tonight?
Very well.
See, I have to ask you. I knew you were gonna have something to eat or drink, so I had to at least say
yes.
Something so I could interrupt you.
Thank you.
There you go.
Well, you know, old McGoogle did have a show.
A heck of a one there was.
Hell yes. With a watch here and a watch there. So apparently they did in fact announce the Pixel Watch. And apparently all of the leaks that we saw, the leaked renders that we saw were kind of on point. But interestingly enough, this particular watch uses the same processor as the 2018 Galaxy Watch.
Boo hiss.
What's up with that,
Well, if that's given if this source is correct.
Yeah, because a lot of people quoted it now.
Well,
yeah.
I'll give you that.
Right.
And I have the original Galaxy Watch, and it's a good watch, even now. All right. It's about 4 years old, which is
about as old as mine,
yeah. But it's still a good watch. All right. But of course that it's not running Wear OS, it's running Tizen.
We were expecting
them to use the Exynos 9110 processor, weren't we?
One of the people that reported it subsequent to whoever the first one that dropped the bombshell said that there's probably no way they can, at this point, if they've been developing that thing since 2018 or 2019, there's probably no way they can get the new chip in that. It's just not going to happen.
I totally understand that. And it got me thinking, then how do smartwatch manufacturers then target a newer chip for their designs? Now, I get it.
They're not all using 4 year old chips. So how are they getting something?
Right. Exactly.
Right.
I don't know.
I don't know either. And the only thing that I can say is that, the version of Wear OS that this thing is running better be optimized to shit. All right. Otherwise,
chips or something like that.
This thing is going to go absolutely just thud because
maybe
the watch. Understand the Galaxy Watch is nice. It's good, but there is I mean, I've got 3 out of 4 Galaxy watches. I've got a number of different, a few other Wear OS watches and an Apple Watch Series 4. And I'm telling you, it's a good watch. It's not the slowest thing that I've got, but you can see with the more advanced watch faces that I'm using from either Samsung Marketplace or from a Facer, that these things, I mean, it really takes a toll. All right,
you but I would add one thing, Chris. Mm-hmm. Never mind. You go ahead. Go on down your path.
Well, you can see my point was you can see that with the more advanced software that's coming out or the newer software that's coming out, that the older chip is starting to lag a little bit.
But I think we need to get closer to the release date to see if this is really true. I mean, really is right. all true.
But yeah, for all we know, they may have that might have been an assumption, and that might have been what they're using for some of their in part of their design process, but they may have taken the Tensor and shrunk it down and to make it fit.
There's a lot of possibilities here.
What I was going to say was, as much as I want to have that watch and as much as I want it to be a success, you cannot deny that Samsung knows way more about watches than Google ever thought about knowing. As good as Google is.
Oh, they've forgotten.
And a lot of people are now saying the same thing.
Yeah, they've forgotten more than Google.
If they stumble on this thing, they're really going to put their face in it.
No, I agree.
Yep.
Yeah, if this is really where they're going, yeah, I would think that's a disappointment. The watch doesn't particularly appeal to me, but I want it to succeed because we were all talking pre-show. It's all about competition, guys. You know, if we can keep the competition going, then everybody else's stuff gets better too.
So I totally agree.
I really want this to succeed for Google because I think Google has been a really good driving force in the whole Android space. And you say, well, yeah, of course they are. They created it. Well, they bought it and they created it. But but the point I'm getting at is that
we all want a pure Wear OS experience.
And I was gonna say, and we need them kind of like we have Microsoft creating the Surface products to act as sort of a template or a benchmark
PCs
or things
no
to consider.
Longer exist. You cannot draw that analogy.
We need Google to do the same kind of thing in the Android space to sort of say, okay, here's what's possible. Here's what's going to happen. But they can't do that if they're going to put out a mediocre product. They're only going to be able to do that if they put out a leader of a product.
I agree. Yep. And the thing that bothers me here, this is 4-year-old technology. And I have a very difficult time believing that Google allowed this to happen, if true.
But I would argue that Samsung's been the one dragging all of the related platforms up the hill by themselves or mostly by themselves for a long time.
Yep.
And I would argue they're doing it in this and they're doing it in tablets, but we'll be talking about tablet shortly.
That 4-year-old chip may just work fine, and maybe Google knows a lot more than we don't.
It might. You're absolutely correct.
That's true.
But keep in mind, we're trying to get these things to run more and more apps. That's going to be a driver. Or as Chris says, more complicated watch faces with a lot more complications on them. That takes overhead to do all
right,
that.
Yep. Right. I'm telling you, those watch faces, those complications work that Exynos 9110 quite a bit. I was hoping for, you know, like everybody else, the Snapdragon Wear 4100 Plus.
We'll see. We'll see where they go with it, you know. But again, even if it uses the same processor, if it does it in a more efficient way, you may not see the same stress, you know.
That's right.
You don't know. Yeah. You don't really know until they deliver this thing.
Right. and with Wear OS, though, it's for the most part, it was never as customized as Android ever was.
True.
The only thing I have a Michael Kors one now. Granted, I will see its slowness mostly when I reboot because it takes for freaking ever for the watch face to reappear after a reboot. But I don't have to reboot it that often, you know, so it's like maybe once a month or something like that. Now, granted, I don't use it as much. But
there's some beauty in simplicity. I mean, I don't personally want to have 48 dials, knobs, and have to do all these things. I want it to do 5 or 6 or 8, maybe 10 things. And that's it. That's all I care about.
Now, one of my hopes, though, for this is that they have something other than a silicone watchband on it, because not a fan of the silicone.
I hate
yes.
But you know, my feeling with the, and I've said the same thing with the Apple Watch, sometimes I'm willing to buy it with a silicone band and then just buy whatever third-party band I want.
Yeah, as long as I can do that.
Exactly. As long as I can do that, I'm fine. All right. You know,
I don't care that I got the watch that way, so...
Right, yeah, but
metal would be ideal. But even if I had a canvas band, that would be much better than the silicone.
I'm with you on that. I prefer to have a canvas band or even a leather band before the silicone, because
that's right.
It sweats too much. It does a lot of things. It turns color.
I want a metal band. I want that stainless steel or some other kind of metal band on there.
Yeah,
just simply because I'm looking for something that's. I don't want to say that I'm addicted to a diver's watch, but I'm looking for something that's got a little bit more to it. All right, and like you guys, the silicone band just creates.
I currently have a metal band on my Apple Watch. That's what I use, and quite frankly, if I could afford one of those Hermes bands, I might spend money on that. You know, but I can't justify that nonsense.
If you can afford to buy an Hermes band, then you can go ahead and just
I wouldn't be talking to you guys at all.
No, you would not. I've known you too long, and I know you too well.
I'm teasing, of course. Of course I would. Now. Of course I would.
Oh, good. You know, there's a lot of things that were announced at this, including potentially, and this is something that's near and dear to all of our hearts, is a potential redesign for Android Auto. I would really...
is beautiful.
Talking. Yes.
It brings it up to par a lot with what we're seeing in the Apple CarPlay space.
Yes.
I don't know if they totally get rid of the scroll bars. I hate the scroll bars. I think it's a bad design choice.
Well, but, yes, because it begs you to go ahead and take your eyes off the road and futz with the scroll up, scroll down.
But it looks like, at least in what I saw, that it's a cleaner interface. It's got the dual screens. Mm-hmm. Or the split screen, excuse me.
Right.
And I just think it brings it up to snuff. It brings it closer to what it needs to be. It modernizes the interface to what everybody else is doing, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But don't forget, the automakers have to play a part. They do. Lexus is way behind.
But I would argue Toyota. I would argue that on my GM screens, and Joel, you and I have talked about this a little bit too.
Right.
The screens on the GM products, you actually already have a split screen on there that you can use, and it's not bad. You know?
No, I got the split screen, but that's it.
Not within Android Auto. I'm talking about within the manufacturer's.
Right, interface. I have that.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, you do. I'm sorry. Okay.
Real wide display, and it's got, you know, you can bust it up however you want.
But my point is that if the manufacturer is already getting into this space and doing this, it's incumbent upon Google to make it work for everybody else, you know.
I agree, and for one that does not have a native CarPlay or Android Auto experience, I bought an Alpine head unit and put it in my car. I'm hoping that it is generic enough and isn't tied to specific makes or models of vehicles, and that it's available to everyone, because at this point what I've got on all of my other Android phone, it's horrible.
Yep.
Here's an honest statement. I have a friend who's in the auto sales business, and he's been there for a lot of years. He's told me more than once recently that the infotainment system on an automobile will make or break a sale at least once or twice a week for him.
Absolutely.
If it doesn't have what they want, they're off to some other manufacturer.
Yep.
It's absolutely true. And I think that's what made companies like Toyota finally cave in, because they weren't going to cave in for a long time.
They were one of the last.
And you have companies like BMW trying to charge you for the privilege. It's like, excuse me, charging me a subscription for the privilege for software that I'm bringing to the table? I don't think so.
Yeah. But the one good thing that I noticed here, at least from this 9 to 5 Google article, is it does look like it will rearrange itself depending on how your car screen looks. Like, for example, Larry's screen is a widescreen versus the screen that I have and Chris has.
Yeah.
And they show one very nicely scaled, and it looks very functional. And then there's one with a more vertical one, you know, so it's, it, you know, that of course mine would be too. The one on the right. Yeah. So it's like, and that's kind of some of the things that needed to happen, because I'm actually a little bit jealous of Larry and that.
Yeah, me too.
With the widescreen, he's got the split media thing. Oh, no, it's just a
beautiful car and a beautiful screen. You know,
and you know what else? I just discovered one more feature that has. If I come up, if I'm at a, I'm traveling on an interstate, and I come up where another interstate crosses that interstate, it will auto split, and it'll remove the radio from the right screen and bring up the detailed information about the exit numbers and all that stuff. That's so cool.
I've seen something similar in CarPlay happen when you're on the navigation using Apple Maps and, and when you're using Google Maps. I've seen something similar happen.
So I mean, we're going to get there. I think it'll are getting better. 4 or 5 more years, but we'll get there.
But they're getting there. And I think we said this a few weeks ago that we know they're going to get there. And here they are announcing the next leap in that. So I'm really pleased to see that. I think that's one of the better. I don't think this was announced in the keynote. It was probably announced in one of the side sessions. But still, it's a really... It's a big deal, and they probably should have mentioned it in the keynote, because I think it impacts more people. But
But I'm glad. I mean, that was my that's really just been my main criticism of using Android Auto with my Traverse, and because that's when I was just using straight up the GM system, which it's okay, but it's kind of awful, but I had to split screen in the nav system. I really liked that, but now it doesn't really, it won't come in time for my trip to Charlotte here in a couple weeks, but it'll
you
get
never
there.
Know. You never know.
That's true.
Sometime this summer. Isn't that what we were all
That's
hearing?
That's what I thought I had.
Yeah.
Heard. Yep. So hopefully it will hit before the great, American road trip time disappears, another thing announced at Google I/O that I think some people may be interested in is the apparent appearance of the Pixel tablet.
I think they were a little premature announcing it if it's not coming till next year.
Yeah, 2023. That's like
I'm glad they're going there. I'm glad they're getting back into space for the same reason I said earlier. I think they need to help drive these things. I don't think the market's capable of driving it by itself right now without some assistance, because it's a pretty scattered market. It's all over the place.
You either have really Pixel tablet may end up being on the really expensive end just because it's going to have the Tensor chip in it. In Android tablet space, you have really expensive ones like the Samsung series.
Yep.
Or you have the cheap ones that are garbage.
And that's really I think the biggest problem that the Android tablet market has had. There were a lot of introductions of low cost budget and Android tablets, and they just died. They were horrible. Yep. They didn't last long. They broke easily, and we just didn't want to go ahead and continue to invest in something that was effectively disposable.
This
is one of the reasons why the iPad took off so well.
Yeah. If you buy a cheap tablet today, buy it with the intention that it's going to have what it's going to have on it until it dies, because you're not going to get software updates.
I was at Costco today, and for the first time in my ever-loving life, I picked up a Galaxy Tab S8 Ultra that cost nearly $1,000, and I was impressed. I mean, I really was.
So, yes, no, the Samsung
I never had one in my hands.
So here's the thing, guys. I think, and we know that, a number of years ago, Google tried to make some adjustments to the operating system to make tablet life a little happier.
That's a 7.
It wasn't very successful, I'm afraid, in the larger market. It wasn't.
Very true.
And they're going to try it again. But what's different this time is has to be the other piece of the equation with this stuff. To make these ecosystem kind of things work, you have to have apps that take advantage of it. You can't fix the OS. The fact that the OS can handle multiply sized windows and do this and do that. So what? If your apps don't know what to do, you're still looking at crap. And that's the problem I have currently with the Samsung, is that the apps don't know what to do. And Samsung correct. Has done a lot to try to put lipstick on the pig, as it were.
Agreed.
Right.
And they really have tried, but they can only go so far with it. So the OS has improved. Android 12L, Android 13 coming out, those have improved that. Mm-hmm. They're going to improve it more. And the thing this time around is that Google has made a commitment to at least change a bunch of their apps. And right. that's where you got to start. They can't make everybody else change their apps, but if it looks like they're leaving their trend, then maybe everybody else will start to follow.
Yeah, right? You can't just scale up the phone app to fill the tablet screen. Because a lot of times that's what it looks like.
You know, and that happens on an Apple device too, if you try to use an iPhone only app. But here's the thing. That's the minority, not the majority of apps when you run them on the tablet in the Apple right. space. Google needs to be there where it's the minority, not the majority. The majority needs to be at least visually improved for the tablet. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it has more functionality or less, you could argue, you know, yes, it should, no, it shouldn't. But they got to get there with apps because this whole scaling up notion is just not where we all want to be. I mean, why buy a tablet? Why not just buy a big phone then? You know? So,
yep.
You know, I want to see them succeed in this space. I really do.
There's a right way to scale them up and there's a wrong way. I personally, my opinion is when I did have the Android tablet, they actually did scale up kind of okay, but not kind of okay.
Yeah, but I want to see things like when I'm on a tablet and I'm running my email app, I want to see the list of email on the left and the current email I'm looking at as a pane on the right.
Yeah.
I want to see that. You don't get that on a phone, you know, really.
Right? No.
And I want to see that. That's why I'm on a tablet. I want it to be a little different.
Right.
And take advantage of the real estate. Make the real estate mean something.
Let's face it, almost every one of us on this show has terrible eyes. So the tablet's great for when you're tired of looking at your phone.
It is.
Sure.
Sure.
Well, even as we sit here, I've got a computer screen running the meeting. I've got my tablet looking at the notes from the meeting, and I've got another tablet sitting in front of me with notes that I've made, hand notes that I've made. To talk about that, you know. So the point I'm getting at is that there's a place for these things, and the place is not as just a big phone. There's more to it.
That's right.
Agree.
And I want that. That's agreed. A companion piece for me.
Agree. No, tablets fill a specific need and niche. Whether it is sitting on the couch and doing something, or whether it is travel, and you want a screen to watch something on the plane or in the hotel, or if you're going to use it as a, you know, just your general manager book.
And even if it's just a smaller part of the market, you know, it's not the biggest, I still think it's a place that needs to be filled, and it needs to be filled well. And I think Google can lead us, you know, there on in that space.
I agree.
It doesn't have to just be about Apple and Samsung.
It would be nice if it wasn't always all about Apple and Samsung, but that's just me, I guess.
Right.
But speaking not just all about Apple or Samsung, there's something else that was announced at.
Are you going to start to do the Steve Jobs? Just one more thing, you know. Are you going to start to do?
No, he's not there yet.
I'm not there. But wait, there's more. The interesting thing, and I saw this, and I said, well, you know, hopefully they can do this because it's making a comeback. Google Wallet is coming back, and they say that it's supposed to be better than it was before. All right. You know, Google Pay is nice and it will store cards and allow you to use them, but I would like to see a full-blown digital wallet.
Absolutely.
I'd like to be able to keep, I mean, right. It takes forever in the state of Illinois to do this and have this happen and set up right. And you've got to constantly refresh the data links, but I was able to go ahead and get a immunization card, a quote unquote live immunization card. All right. Meaning that the data is automatically refreshed in my iPhone with Apple Wallet for all of my COVID vaccines.
Yep, I've got the same thing here, so I get it.
Right, right. And that's a big deal, especially when you have an employer, or if you're getting to a point where, you know, you may have to again, display your latest greatest vaccination status if the numbers keep on going the way that they're going, at least here in Illinois. So
having you know, important as like, we were talking as we were talking about this before the show, this new rebirth of the Google Wallet is really no more than trying to play catch up with Apple. This thing's going to store payment cards. It's going to do NFC. It's got, you put your concert tickets in it, your loyalty passes.
It's
going to
take some of what's in Google Play,
vaccine card. Yeah. But you know what, folks? That's not a bad thing because the Android world did not have this before now.
It did not.
It was all limited to Apple.
It was. And it was something.
So, I mean, personally, I think it's a good thing, even if it doesn't get better than Apple. I don't care about that.
It doesn't need to be better than Apple. It should do at least the same things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It needs to do at least the same things, which may re-engineer Google Pay a little bit, which from my perspective is just fine.
Yeah. Right? It sounds like almost like they're kind of splitting out some things. Where Google Pay will just become Google Wallet again, and because there's certain things like I bought tickets earlier this month for the Ohio State Fair, which isn't till the end of July, but because I bought them because they were like $6 a person,
sure,
versus what they'll be in July,
sure.
They're all stored in Google Pay right now,
mm-hmm.
Because they're electronic.
Does it do the airline tickets too?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a feature I like. I like having my store loyalty cards are in there.
Yep.
All that stuff is all been very, very useful. Now, you know,
actually, Apple's most of the store loyalty cards, I used to just punch my phone number because I never had the key fob, and I don't want to scan it.
Well, yeah. I'll give you an example. I mean, if people are not in this region, they won't know this chain, but there's a regional chain called Myers that is a grocery and a combination. It's kind of like a Walmart, but
it's a good one too.
It's a little bit upscale. It's a tiny bit upscale from Walmart. But the point is that thing, when I have that loyalty card in my phone, it knows when I entered the store and when I walk up to the register, it says, hey, do you want to scan your loyalty card? I mean, it just automatically does that as part of the process. It says, hey, I know where you are. Yep. I know you're in our store.
Yep.
And do you want to do this?
Yeah.
It's like,
and I got a $7 discount I'm sitting on top of. So, yeah. I mean, it's totally worth that.
By the way, not that that's not creepy, too, by the way, but we won't
we'll
pursue that conversation at the moment.
Right.
But it is. But the point is all that kind of stuff feeds together. The fact that they're now going to potentially carry your state IDs when states cooperate. Well,
see, and there's the rub. There's where this thing turned for Google Pay and Google Wallet. All right. If there really is going to be a digital ID, and if there really is going to be a way to have, you know, your vaccination cards and your state IDs and your insurance cards and blah, blah, blah.
Yep. My insurance cards are in there. Yep. All of that.
Android is a huge opera. I mean, there's two, right, mobile operating systems. One has the ability to do this, the quote unquote, right way. And I say quote unquote because it's the only way that it's out there right now. All right.
Yeah.
Right.
And the other operating system kind of sort of maybe does it, but not really. All right.
Not so, completely anyway, but I'd like to see it flush it out.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And so you don't have a digital wallet on the other operating system. And I would like to see some parity come. I would like to see some equivalent functionality. I would like it to be just as easy for me to store and use my loyalty cards, my credit cards, my immunization and insurance cards, whether it's auto or health insurance. I would like it to be all there because honestly, it's easier to carry than anything else, right? I've always got my phone with me anyway.
I'm with you. And I think they're going there and it's going to be nice to see them go there.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's interesting because I know our next topic
is important
for us to trust this wallet.
Yes,
yeah. Right. You see, and that's where that's where we're serious
about privacy.
And see, Chris, I can help you with segues. See, Vegas,
that's my primary concern with Google Wallet. Is I don't want my driver's license in Google Wallet. My loyalty card, who gives a rip? You know.
I get what you're saying. I think we're all kind of. You got to have a certain level of trust, right? Or otherwise, we don't want to do this.
Right, right.
That's right.
And for Google to be able to do this and do this well to the point where we are trusting of the Google wallet. Google has to get serious about privacy and not just give us this lip service. Google got, we were talking about this, and I believe it was in the prep show. We may have also touched on it when we were talking about Android Auto. But Google got to be, Google Maps got to be as good as it is because Google skimmed everything. They took every piece of information they could gather from you. All right. Including, you know, type and flavor of underwear and the gum that you chewed last week.
All of whether it. That was in your underwear.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
Yeah.
All right. But that's how Google Maps got to be so good. Hey, Google, show me this kind of restaurant near me. Right. Or as I think Larry mentioned it, you take a picture of the dish that you're eating or would like to eat. And
yep.
It shows you all of the restaurants within a X mile radius
or you're driving by a restaurant and your Google map says, hey, wait a minute. You had a great taco here last week. You want to stop again?
Well, right. and they started mapping before everybody else did. That right. helps. They got to jump on it. They had their search business to draw from a lot of information from, and they did a good job of putting this together to the point again that it gets creepy sometimes.
Oh, it's totally creepy.
But
it's totally creepy.
I mean, that's what's driven a lot of their AI and all these things that they're very good at now is these huge data sets. And yeah, I think it's good to see them, but the side effect of this, as we sort of have said, is that we gotta review privacy because they haven't always been the best caretakers as far as privacy is concerned. There are certainly worse players out there. We all know that. We've all had those conversations.
Yep.
By far, there are worse players out there in terms of your privacy. But and
did we say
better.
Facebook?
Sorry. I spelled that.
I didn't hear you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But having said that, you know, Google was in a bad place a number of years ago, as far as I'm concerned with this stuff. Sure. And they've gotten a lot better. Are they everywhere they think they should be yet?
Chris, interestingly, I'm reading from Google Print here exactly what they say they're going to do. They say that users will soon be able to request that all personal information, such as their email, their address details, be removed from all search results through a new tool that will be accessible from every person's own profile page. Not there yet. But when that gets there, if it works and if it's true, they've made a hell of a big step.
They made a big step, but they're also going to seriously jeopardize their revenue. Where is all of their money come from? All of their money's come from all of the
ads
and deep data mining that they get from those ads.
Well, that doesn't say that they're not saying that they're going to not
do it right,
and they're not going to anonymous tracking, you know, things like that.
They said at I/O that they would be able to do these things without personal information going forward.
Yeah, they say that. Yeah, I'm not sure I entirely believe that based on some of the models that I've heard, not just from them, but in general, the conversations in general. It's like, yeah, but if you have enough other pieces, it becomes identifiable. You know, I'm not willing to believe that it's not really identifiable. But having said that, let's give them the benefit of the doubt on this. The point is that they have gone, they've changed a lot of their policies and they've improved their ability to give users access to it. There are things even now that we can do that we couldn't do a few years ago in terms of.
Right.
And this was the first thing they talked about at I/O.
Right. Yeah. But you also to understand when a third of the European continent drops off the face of Google Maps because they've all said, I don't want you to track me or anything about me. Just, you know, that's it. All right.
Well, I'm wondering how much this dings them in the wallet.
It's going to hurt. You know, it's going to hurt because they're making money off that data.
Right.
You know,
and
it's true.
Yeah. I mean, and it also goes to, I think privacy also for some people is a little bit more sensitive than it is for other people.
Well,
you know, like for
GDPR
example,
existence because Google abused their position and the European Union wasn't satisfied with the things that the folks over at Google said that they were going to do to sort of curtail all that stuff. And they said, no, that's nice.
Well, you know what? I get where Chris is coming from, because they have always sort of lied a little bit in the past. They've not done quite what they said they were going to do. But they've got this thing called differential privacy. And I made it a point, you know, several days ago to go read about this. If it works, it'll be great, because it's something where they can publicly share information about a data set. And they can do all the patterns and describe the patterns of a group and individuals without any individual information. If they can do that, that's a tough nut to crack.
Exactly. Then good on you.
And to me, I want to be really honest here, though, too. Google's the last person, the last company we really should worry about some of this. I'm not saying we should.
I agree. Yeah.
But when I can go to the Franklin County Clerk of Courts website, and I can look up people's names and find out, oh God, they were arrested 2 days ago, you know, and stuff like that.
I'm with you on that too. But the point is,
it's public record. That's the thing. It's like our address is technically a public record.
But that's localized, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Is that a lot of those, what I would argue, breaches or less secure sources aren't somebody that somebody over in, you know, we'll just say one of these less,
Madarasa?
less straightforward yes, locations where behaving is a little bit of a gray area. I would say that they're not likely going to go pull that from a particular county's records and a particular thing. They're going to look at the bigger data sets and where those targets are instead.
Yeah,
and that's going to be. And so really, I'm not as worried, but I am worried about, again, like we said, I don't know that I would say Google is the last person I'd look at, but they're certainly not number one.
Sure.
No,
but I don't think it's right that Google knows exactly where my car was, what parking lot, what store I was in front of.
I agree.
3 days ago at 12:15 in the afternoon. And they do.
And that's the problem with it. But all right, so let's go ahead and stick a pin in this and put it in the wait and see category and see how it.
But they have a lot of exciting things. They have a lot of exciting things coming up.
If they do
some of the things that they're saying with privacy, that's going to make these other things to me a lot more appealing. If they actually follow through on this stuff,
Chris didn't have it on his list, but honestly, we all know it was coming, but the Pixel 7 is coming out this fall.
True.
With Generation 2.
The 7 Tensor. And the 7 Pro.
Yep, 7, yep. 7 Pro. And the watch is supposed to be a perfect companion to the 7 and 7 Pro. And we'll have to wait and see how it goes.
And they have other wearables products that I know Larry was really excited about coming out. I don't want to detail into those.
I'm not excited anymore because I don't think they'll fit me.
But, I mean, he's talking about the initial concept.
Apple AirPods Pro. I couldn't hate AirPods any worse than. I mean, I hate them.
Yeah. No, I get. Yeah, you.
The Pixel Buds Pro. You know, they're coming, and then they had the interesting demo with the glasses, which.
Yeah,
I'm like, if that's all it does, not interested. If it can do other things, maybe.
I think what's going to happen though is I think a lot of the stuff that we didn't hit on that was covered at I/O, we're going to be hitting on in the coming months as these things actually become a little better developed, come a little closer to release. We're going to be talking about this stuff because there was a lot there's a lot to unpack in this event.
Google Wallet coming out in 3 weeks, 2 weeks now.
We've only talked about really, really what, five things, and we've mentioned a few others here just very briefly.
So
that was unpacked at that.
I don't want our listener to think that we're not concerned about these.
Mom is
things.
Okay with it.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Good to know.
Right.
You know, we will be talking about these things. I have no doubt in my mind.
Yes, I know.
Just like we won't be talking about the next topic.
Because you can't touch this. You know. The iPod. This is the pod that you can't touch. You know.
Anyway,
I'm glad I saved two of them. They're both working, and someday they'll be worth a lot of money. Maybe.
You know,
that might be now.
My granddaughter has a, I think it is, a three or so year old iPod Touch, and she calls that her phone. Right.
That's right.
Because it does everything. It does everything that a iPhone can do, except make a cellular call. But it can go ahead, as long as she's on a recognized Wi-Fi network, she can make audio FaceTime calls. She can make video calls and do everything else. Yeah. But unfortunately, Apple has finally gone and discontinued the one product that absolutely pulled them back away from the edge. You know,
the Mac was what they became. That's for sure. It defined what they became as a company.
Yep. The Mac was risky, you know, OS 10 again, you know, supporting the Mac and also risky. This changed the face.
This in conjunction with iTunes and the iTunes Store.
Yes.
It totally changed music industry and the way we work and sell it. They changed everything with this thing.
Yep, and I know they changed the media system. I mean, they weren't the first streamers.
I was just going to say they weren't.
No, they weren't. But there were MP3 players all over the place.
But nobody was really cornering the market.
There was no leader.
These guys did was they put together a product that could hold a lot.
A thousand songs.
Right.
And it wasn't even just a touch. Remember, they had the mechanical drive ones.
Right.
Which I still have, by the way.
And they put that together with a place that you could buy the digital media. You didn't have to go to all these little weird one-off places to get. And it was hard to get digital media.
You didn't have to rip the stuff off your CD.
Exactly. Collection. You could actually just go get it. And by the way, they did it for 99 cents a song at the time. And that was a huge.
That's right.
That was a price point that they had to fight for to get that price point.
Oh, absolutely.
Out of the record company. So the
RIA was absolutely losing their mind over it because they're like, well, our piracy problems have just gotten all that much.
But the problem
worse.
They had was the industry was starting to fail. People weren't buying records. They weren't buying CDs. They weren't buying cassettes.
They weren't
doing anything. The market was starting to slide because people didn't want to pay for those things anymore.
Well, they didn't want to have to carry them around.
And they didn't want to have to carry them around, especially now they had digital. So Apple, in some ways, you could say they destroyed it and you could say that they saved it.
I really wish they would have bought it. I wish they would have bought the RIA, but that was that was back then. All right,
right.
They didn't do that.
But it is sad to me to see. It is the end of an era. I mean, I understand that the functionality lives on in other devices and all that today. I mean, I'm okay with that. But
exactly, it lives on in Apple Music and your iPhone.
It was a thing, you know. I mean, it was a huge thing, and
there's still a bunch of renewed ones now. So if you want to grab a renewed one here or there. I would, you might even be able to find some renewed Apple iPod Classics, which are with the traditional scroll wheel. Mm-hmm. And there was actually some rumors, like when the iPod Touch came out, that they were going to, and probably right before the iPhone came out, that they were going to implement the scroll wheel interface on the touchscreen. And I'm glad they didn't do that.
I am going to miss the iPod. And the iPod I had a lot of good memories of various iPods that I've had over the years. And,
and I had one of yours.
Did I think you
sent me? Yeah. Well, it's dead now, but
They only.
Hey, Joel, you were right. I just looked up my iPod Mini. It's the first Mini, and I bought it in 2001. Still have it. Still works. Mm-hmm. It's now worth upward of $400, going up.
There you go. Day.
Yep. I think I had
I'm on Amazon. Yeah, I'm on Amazon right now, and they have the 32 gigabyte iPod Touch renewed for $219.
Yep.
See that? Which I think it's higher than it was.
Yeah,
it might
brand
be.
New.
You know, it's interesting. You know, I think this one is sentimental for nearly just about everyone. You know, we've all had it in some way, shape, or form. Every Apple iPhone user, every Apple iPod user has been touched by this. And the miracle and the re-energizing effect that it had for not only Apple, but the record industry. I think the music artists, we're wondering there for a while how they were going to get their get their music.
And let's not forget, it also triggered digital video sales.
It did
for the first time. It was a big thing for them.
Yep.
And when people realized you could do video on these things, it was too tiny. Let's be honest.
That was the first one I had. Was the first one that would let you watch video on the iPod screen.
But the fact that you could do it And that led to, and that was started with music videos, and they were running movies and
right.
all this stuff that you could purchase. We were just all, you know, again, it's not that nobody did these things, but nobody did the whole kind of ecosystem in a nice package like this.
Agree.
And made it functional, made it practical, got the, again, same thing with the movies. They got the price points to a point where
$10
people were willing to say, okay, I'll buy one, mm-hmm. you know, I'll try it.
Yep.
And 15 probably, bucks, whatever it was.
And that was at when they first brought out the iPods and iTunes. At that moment in time, iTunes didn't suck.
I totally right. agree.
Yeah. yeah. It was really great. It was, and I think back to, what did I have before an iPod? Because I did have an MP3 player before an iPod. I had the Creative Zen 2, and you had to use Creative software.
Yeah,
and I remember. I love their sound cards, but gosh, your software was really horrible awful. For that thing.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah.
It was.
And probably my fondest MP3 player I had was that wasn't an iPod, was Best Buy and their Insignia brand. they had brought out MP3 players, mm-hmm. and I had the one, I think it was called the Pilot. And it had a micro SD card slot. And guess what? It actually also had in it as well. Bluetooth.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
And it was cheap. And that was one of the ones. And of course, what did I do? Well, when my son was younger, I had it in my pocket. I was listening to something with Bluetooth headphones. I rolled over and I cracked the screen.
Oh, gosh.
But that was the end of that.
And let's not forget that the biggest competitor for a little while there was the Microsoft Zune, which I actually thought was a good device.
Which I have one.
But they missed the market a little bit. They didn't quite do what they
a little did. Late.
They were really good at missing the market on a lot of things. Over you know, the years.
Microsoft yeah. during that era, yes, they did.
Windows Phone was a decent
product. Well, yeah. don't even get yep. me started on Windows
don't
Phone.
Even
you know,
get me started
you know I love Windows Phone.
Yes,
I do too.
I still wish somebody would come back with it. If we could get the apps, I would say, please bring it back, but we can't.
Yeah. And that was the big problem with that.
Right.
Speaking of older technology and coming back, you know, a lot of what's happening right now in Europe, getting back to some of the Google privacy stuff that we mentioned, GDPR yeah. and the European Union sort of regulating and demanding
the stores and all that other stuff that they're trying to regulate.
Right.
Yep.
I think he's beating around the bush to get to the USB-C.
Yeah.
I think. Yes. But then it's not, why are you talking about all the technology,
They're going to demand that, you know, all mobile devices standardize their connections on USB-C. And you know, what's interesting is, I'm okay with this. I mean, my iPad Pros have got USB-C ports. All right.
See, one big reason for that, when they replaced the 30-pin connector, which was the iPod connector, was docks and stuff like that. And you just, I mean, I'm not saying there aren't any docks for your iPhone and stuff. There are, but they're not quite as needed anymore because Bluetooth speakers.
And, yeah, wireless connections and syncing and all that.
And streaming. So it's a good time for a jump. They've already did it on the iPads. It just makes sense. And even better too, when you think about, you got an iPhone in your pocket that can record 4K HDR, and
it's still using a proprietary connector.
Well, you're going over USB 2 as well.
Right.
So that takes forever to offload it off your phone.
Well, see, most of that stuff, though, I think part of what Apple may or may not, there's talk now of Apple completely doing away with the SIM card. There's talk now of Apple, you know, moving to USB-C. I think they were going to be doing USB-C either in 2023 or 2024. On iPhones for sure. I wouldn't be surprised if they totally bypass that and go completely cableless.
Here's what I'm wondering, guys. If the European Union mandates USB-C, and it looks like they might, first of all, you know, a lot of these guys were going there anyway. At some point in time, they're going to get there anyway.
Well, all Android.
But my problem with that is the whole thing, doesn't that prevent them from adopting better technologies as they become available? Because now we're going to have to wait. Now we're going to have to wait. Yes, it is. Because we're going to have to wait for the European Union to say, okay, you can implement that technology. We're going to have to wait for a government approval to get the next. And that's my only concern with it. I think it's going to actually, short term, yes, it's going to standardize and make certain things easier. I don't know that it was critical to do this, but I get the desire to do this, but I don't think it should be mandated. I think
Europe is hiccuping on, though, is there's too much electronic waste out there, number one.
Absolutely.
There's plastic waste, there's electronic waste. All true. Rare earth elements that are used in all of this stuff, etc., and we're not recycling enough of it, and we're not a lot of this stuff is disposable and it ends up in a landfill.
And that's why nobody, it seems like nobody is shipping actual power adapters with their phones anymore.
But shouldn't we have been down this path with everybody with USB and micro USB and mini USB and all those flavors? I mean, those were actually way worse than this whole Lightning versus USB-C thing. I mean, it was way worse.
And I don't think like Chris, Mr. Sparrow here said that maybe they might bypass it altogether and go with wireless. And there's only one problem with that is wireless charging still isn't as fast as a USB-C charge.
That's true. I will give you that.
So it's like, putting a pad next to your nightstand, you slapping your phone on it, it's still going to be charged in the morning. The problem isn't the nightly charge. It's the one where you run out in the middle of the day, you still got 6 hours to go.
That's when I plug in.
And sticking it on that pad only, you know, gets you maybe 10% or so
in
a couple of hours.
Well, and there's a lot of this, but there's a lot of that when they're talking about wireless charging. We really don't have wireless charging. We have conductive charging.
We do.
But wireless charging is coming. So, it's going to be interesting.
Over the air. You mean over the air?
Yeah. OTA over the air. True wireless charging is coming. It's not that far away. How does that affect?
You got a heat problem to overcome, though.
I know. They're not there yet.
Both conductive as well as OTA.
Yeah, it's true too. So the question is that going to restrict the ability to put some of these things? I guess what the thing is, they're going to say, yeah, put a USB-C, but you can do whatever else you want on top of it, but you got to have a USB-C. And I'm thinking, if that's what they say, well, okay. But again, I think we're going to get anchored to this thing in a number of years that nobody's going to want to support anymore.
I agree.
And it's like, now what do we do?
I agree.
It's a challenge. Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely a challenge. And I get what they're struggling with and what we're all struggling with. But I hope they find a better way to do this or find a way to make it more flexible down the road. But
because that'll be important. You're right.
It'll be important.
You're right.
You're going to solve the problem today, but create a problem for tomorrow. You're just going to kick the can down the road, is what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And how often does that happen in government?
Never. Yeah.
Well, I will tell you the one thing that I am glad in terms of an Apple update, I saw that Universal Control is coming out of beta in iOS 15.5 and Mac OS 12.4. Which, by the way, has got either first or second release candidate that was just
released. The release candidates are out now. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I know, Chris, you're one that really uses Universal.
I do. And I love it. I love it a lot. But I will tell you, with this much beta or not, it does have one limitation. And I think I've mentioned it to you guys before. It requires both Bluetooth and your Wi-Fi network to run.
Right.
And the problem is, if you are doing your work like I do across a VPN, you lose the capability. And that bothers me because, yes, the VPN is now your primary connection, but your other connection didn't go away. Why can't it continue to work?
Well, you're still connected to your access point.
But it doesn't work at that point. So basically, Universal Control goes away if you go on a VPN.
Which is kind of crap.
It's kind of goofy because,
again, you have to connect to your access point.
And we want it, primarily for the purposes of our workflow. So
right. That's right.
What I find myself doing is I only connect when I have to, right? And then I reconnect the other way. And it's not a hard manual process or anything like that. I don't want to imply that it is, but it's awkward. And I would like it that it would just find whatever path it needed to find to get to my devices. As long as my devices say I'm as part of this Apple user, because that's really what you have to do. You have the same Apple user for the devices in question. And that's how it ties them together. Why can't you find that on whatever networks are available to you?
I agree. There should not be, especially on VPN, with this is really meant for some kind of a work, as you said, workflow operation.
Yeah. And right? Maybe there is something there that I'm just missing, but I don't think so. I haven't found a way around it yet.
Well,
but having said that, I mean, I think that they would adjust that and change that and improve that. It would be darn near flawless, because I'll tell you what, when you're not on it, I've heard people say it's laggy. I've never experienced it being laggy. I think that's a function of their own network more than anything else.
Yeah, I haven't even tried it yet.
I like the feature. I use it a lot. I am very dependent on it. I'm using it now as we speak. Sure. it's quite fascinating, but again, I want them to fix what it's, again, I shouldn't say it's broken. It's not broken, but it is a design limitation that I wish they would work their way past. So, but you know, so never let it be said, I'm not willing to be critical of Apple. I am critical. I think this thing needed that extra layer.
Agreed.
And it didn't get it yet.
Agreed. Well, we'll see how it all comes together. Like Larry, I haven't used it yet.
I won't have the opportunity until October when I finally get a Mac.
Well, it'll be an interesting time to see, you know, how well it is adopted. I've got a extra display that I carry with me. That's a nice 15-inch 16 by 9.
Your pick of the week, right?
10, huh?
Isn't that your pick of the week?
Yeah, well, it was at one point. Yes.
It was at one time. Yeah.
Yeah. So it does very, very well. It's just a plug in and that's it. Runs off of a laptop power and there you go. So, and we'll see, you know, what happens. But I'd like to see features like this get a lot of use.
I'm going to guess it's going to get similar use to the way the current
sidecar.
Well, it's not just not so much sidecar, but some of the other the handoff. You know, the handoff.
Some of the other third parties.
Yeah, because they're all dependent on the same hooks, right? Not third party. It's not third party. It's just the built-in stuff that the OS uses to hand things, you know, to share the control panel between your devices and the other things that it does today already, that a lot of people use pretty regularly, sometimes without realizing that they're using them. But the point is, it's all based on the same set of technology. So yeah, I would expect a similar kind of adoption rate overall. And because it'll all of a sudden pop up and you won't realize you had it until you have it.
Sure.
You know, because you don't have to do anything to get it. All of a sudden you're going to be moving your mouse going, why did my mouse disappear from my computer screen? The next thing you're going to look over and realize it's on your iPad. You're gonna,
right.
Oh, that's right. Cool. The discovery is kind of, you know,
true.
Is what's going to drive it. So yeah, it'll be interesting.
Right.
Yep.
You know, and for our last story tonight, you know, Larry, you really had a lot of thoughts about this, because I know that you've done a lot of work for admin related work, sysadmin related work for some folks, and apparently Windows 10, Windows 11 future editions are going to require the use of a Microsoft account to be able to set up Windows.
That's true. I've actually done a little more research on this, and Microsoft is going to be inflexible. They are absolutely going to require this. And so far, nobody can give us a really good reason. I'm sure Microsoft will come up with one before they put this thing into the channel. But today, I mean, right now, I still configure and deploy laptops for two organizations. Mm-hmm. Folks, this is going to be a pain in my tail. I don't know how I'm going to do it. Well, I called a couple of my cohorts that work with small companies, way lower, way smaller than enterprise. And you know what they're thinking about? Chromebooks. They're thinking about changing from Microsoft well, just because of this.
You know, let me just say this. There are a number of different admin tools that are out there for, especially for larger organizations.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
I know. Right.
You may be able to get them even for smaller organizations. An imaging tool that will go ahead. You have one. All right. Microsoft account. admin@yourdomain.com. All right. And you set up the machine, you get the image the way that you want it, stop, hit the backup button, image that, copy that image off, and then you keep, after it's already been registered and up and running, and then you just keep on using that image over and over.
Well, let me ask
you. Well, I've looked at this, and as a matter of fact, the two nonprofits for which I mm-hmm. do this, mm-hmm. I went up and looked. Microsoft is really good. They have a great nonprofit resource center. Mm-hmm. There is nothing that they sell that they won't give to nonprofits as far as software goes. Literally, it's right. unbelievable what the resources are. Something like you're talking about is not up there. I mean, it's not yet.
It's a third party tool.
Let me ask right. you. So you mentioned that some of the people you talk to are talking about going to Chromebooks. Doesn't that force you to use a Google account? I mean, how do you get apps?
Google Enterprise. You don't have to do that, Chris.
Enterprise. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
But how do you get education apps?
I personally think that Microsoft will bend before this is over. They'll probably make something that will make it easy for us.
For the consumer market, I don't see this as being a problem.
Oh no, not at all. They should have an account.
You know, let them have a Microsoft account and let them go buy Office and renew.
Well, that's
Office
what we've seen in the mobile space for a few years that we've been kind of forced on this path. So what's the difference? You know, I guess
not much. Seriously, not much. But for the consumer market, I do not see that. You know, where this is a problem for smaller companies or whatever.
This will not change the education market. And the full-on enterprise, you know, so if you select work or school option when you're doing setup of that machine mm-hmm. instead of the personal option, you can still sign in with your work or school Microsoft account. That right. part will never change. But right. that doesn't help small business, nonprofits, and other organizations.
Exactly. Which and are, need, by the
but,
way.
But here's the thing. You're still tied to a Microsoft account.
Right. No, but Larry is right. This is going to be a huge issue and problem for smaller businesses, small LLCs, companies that are, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of around, you know, 1 to 20 or so people.
Well, just think people who don't get Office 365 for the company or set up their own domain controller. I mean,
right.
Yeah. And it's not when you buy Office 360 or now Microsoft 365 for 100 people, that's not cheap. I mean, for a small business, that's a big expense.
No, it's not. Yep. It is an expense.
I mean, I pay $100 for my family for Office 365.
Yeah. Yep. I'm like so you. I pay $70 just for myself.
Yep.
Right.
And we'll see how it goes. This is another subject I think we need to stick a pin in.
We'll see where this goes, but I can't see them.
I know they have a larger conversation about where all of these companies are going with their quote unquote security models, right? Mm-hmm. Because we've chatted about some of the challenges with Apple's current model. We've chatted offline of this about their model, but Google's forcing us down a similar path. Microsoft's forcing us down a similar path.
Right.
Maybe all for different reasons. Maybe we're all for the same reasons, but the fact is the models are changing.
They are.
And I think it's going to be I think you're right. We're going to stick a pin in this. We're going to keep coming back to this conversation.
Yeah. What I think is probably going to happen at some point though, is I think that people are going to start to get fed up with the walled garden like Apple has. I know Larry was having issues this week with his Apple TV boxes.
Yeah.
You know, so, and at some point people are going to say, you know what, I'm done with this. And I'll either go here, everything, I'll put everything in here and not try anything else ever.
Yeah, I'm gonna take those two Apple TVs back that we got for that one organization because we got them at Costco, so they're still in warranty, and just return them. I'm gonna get them Roku Ultra so they don't have a problem.
And when you do that,
that's not a bad decision either.
When you do that, I want to talk about that whole experience on the next show because I do think that it warrants a conversation.
It does.
Sure.
And it's largely just for our listener who is curious about what we're talking about. It all wraps up with Apple's 2FA system, to two-factor authentication system.
So. Right. And it's not just that either, though, because when you think about it, when you have these kind of walled gardens and stuff like that, it's like, okay, do you really think that actually adds to security by forcing people to have a Microsoft account? I don't think it does.
Well, but you can have just as much security with a local account with Microsoft.
Exactly.
Come on, you know that.
Well, yeah. Yeah. No, good so Lord. But here's the thing, and here's where I think a lot of this is going. Well, I don't want to get too far in the weeds on this thing, but I don't think it's about the local security on the device. I think it's more.
No, it's not about local security. It's about internet security.
It's about internet security, and it's about Joel. You just threatened somebody, you know, on the internet. And guess what? They can follow you through your login now, you know, because you had to log in. You couldn't get on without having logged in. You couldn't do anything without having logged in. It's not, you know what I'm saying? That's kind of where I think all of this is going.
I agree.
You know, and we can have a much larger conversation about whether that's.
And if y'all don't like that stuff, Linux doesn't have any of it. So there you go.
Unless you're using one of those.
Well, you know, that's another subject for another day too.
It is.
Because Linux is actually getting to the point where, you know, you can have somebody buy it and never seen it before and use it just like a Chrome.
Absolutely.
Well, and Google has been adding some things that they're becoming a little bit more of a walled garden than they used to be. Mm-hmm. So yeah. They're adding some little pieces that are heading down that path to an extent too. So
yes,
everybody's kind of.
It'll never happen with Linux.
No, I don't think it's going to happen with Linux, but Linux might find itself excluded from other things because of that as a possibility.
I agree.
It's hard to know. Hard to know where this is going.
Yeah, they might not. They might not fill the bill for.
You may find a day where, and I'm going to use this as an example, but it's probably a bad one, where you can't do a. There's no Linux client for Twitter or something because
right.
You can't authenticate.
Who gives a crap about that? It's called a browser. Anyway,
right. But the point is, you're going to be forced. To give a login somewhere and to give identification somewhere is what I'm getting at.
Agree.
So
I agree. Coming.
Well,
we'll be talking about this one again.
We will.
Years. So
likely. Let's go ahead and stick a pin in that though. But I'd like to go ahead now and move us to our pick of the week segment. And I'd like to take a moment here just to let our listeners know that our show picks are typically hardware, software, and other items of interest that we have individually purchased and actually used and like enough that we want to recommend them to you. All right. We're not paid for any of this. They are not paid advertisements or items with which we have an affiliate marketing relationship. According to the iTech Gear editorial policy, if they were, we would have to mention that up front before we would go ahead and mention what the pick is. We sincerely believe in these picks, and we bring them to you at the end of each show because we think you might like them too.
It's not always tech either.
very, very true.
And I'm glad that we give the disclaimer and all, but every time you end that disclaimer, I keep thinking, are you going to start waving a flag and singing?
Folks, if you do like them, you can always send us a dozen Krispy Kremes.
That's right.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would take a dozen Krispy Kremes for sure.
Or you take a really, really cool Anchor product. Hey, Anchor, you know, we're open.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Yeah,
I hear you. And Joel, you know, you mentioned that some of these things, some of these picks aren't necessarily technology based in
that's right
in nature. So why don't you go ahead and give us your pick of the week,
which is definitely not technology.
This
well,
is what I'm
it
saying.
Kinda is. Yeah. Because one of the things I think it's important about a pick of the week is sharing something that makes life easier. Okay. So as a permanent work from home employee, unless my company does something dumb, My daily uniform is usually t-shirts and shorts. Yep. Okay. So I have a ton of them. Okay.
Even in the winter, you wearing shorts even in the winter? Are you that
actually
guy?
Yeah. You're yeah, I am that guy. I am that guy. Yeah. Now I'm not crazy. I used to have a guy that would go out in 20 below in shorts. I'm not that crazy.
Okay, you're not that guy. But
I don't know. I've seen these kids at the store in shorts in the middle of winter, and I don't understand how.
Around the house always. So
okay.
But I picked up this. It's like $10 from Amazon. It is a t-shirt. It says t-shirt folding board, but I actually just call it a folding board, or that's what I would call it, because I've actually used it to fold up my shorts too. Actually. Mm-hmm. So basically, you just lay your t-shirt out on it. You kind of fold the sleeves in, flip one side over, flip the other side over, then flip the bottom over, and your t-shirt is now folded, and it looks nice. And it now
slides right out, right? And the board slides right out.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say slide right out. I just pick it off the top usually. I don't think you don't have to actually fold it in like a.
You don't put it inside the shirt.
No, not at all. So I mean, it's like $11.99. I picked it up because I've been thinking about it for a while, because like I said, I have a ton of t-shirts, and for some reason, my fingers don't want to fold them the right way so that all my t-shirts fit in the drawer. So it's always bulging and stuff. And so it's like, but now it does. So I mean,
there you go.
Like I said, I used it to fold up my athletic shorts. I mean, I just pulled up the waistband up to the top, flip, done. You know, it's like in it worked for that, you know. So I don't really think that you probably can fold a lot of things with this thing, and it'll make your closet look a whole lot nicer.
Well, I've certainly seen them use them in the clothing stores, and I think it's a great idea.
I saw one today at Costco. Lady was folding t-shirts, actually was.
There you go.
Yep. And it makes it look nice and good.
And this is an Amazon choice product. So there you go.
Is.
There you go.
Well, there you go. Yeah, really.
Yep.
And speaking of choice, Chris, you've made one for this week.
I actually did. And I probably almost would have brought this up last week. We were running a little long last week. Didn't kind of go there. But a number of weeks ago, I had decided, in my typical environment, I have a MacBook as my primary driver, and I use I use an iPad Pro 12.9 inch on the side, mostly because I have to read a lot of technical documents and I like the bigger screen. I like the bright, it's very bright, it's the micro LED, it's visually gorgeous, and you know, you have the keyboard when you need it, all that kind of good stuff. But it doesn't meet all of my needs as a companion piece, because I still like to take a lot of notes. And although I love the 12.9, it is a big device, you know, let's be honest. And I found that a lot of times I'm going out, I'm on call every few weeks, I have to go out, and I wanted something smaller. So I picked up an iPad mini is what I did, one of the current generation of iPad mini, slapped a SIM card in it, and have used it as my on-call device, because I can connect in using a VPN remotely to my office. I have a mini flat kind of spongy keyboard that I carry with me that's about the same size as the mini. And I use that when I have to, you know, make quick connections in to do work. And I use it as my primary note-taking device now, interestingly enough. Pen. I use my pen.
Okay.
I do things with my pen a lot. Inking is important to me. I think, Larry, I know you and I have talked about note-taking apps and why, you know, the whys and wherefores. And so inking is important to me. It does a very good job with it, despite the fact that it doesn't have the whole, all the bang and whistles that are in the iPad Pro 12.9. It has enough. I've seen some people talk about the jelly roll on scrolling and browsing. I haven't really noticed it if it's going on, probably because I've been doing devices for so many years that they all used to do that. So I never really thought much of it. But I found it to be a very nice companion piece. I mean, even when you have to, let's just say go to the bathroom quickly or something like that.
Thank you.
Take that reader in with you.
There you go.
The point I'm getting at is that this thing is extremely portable. It's very small. Again, it's bigger than the phone. The phone's a little too small for me for working on the screen. I can't do things like composing my emails well. I can do a quick one, but I'm terrible at typing on the phone keyboard for any extended period of time. So it's nice to have something slightly larger, but not quite as big as my 12.9 inch, which is almost as big as my laptop anyway. So yeah, it makes for an interesting mix of things. And I've been really happy with them. Of course, they're available from Apple for, you know, what, $499 to $799, depending on how you load it up.
Sure.
And it's just a nice kind of place to be in between the phone and in between the bigger iPad and in between my computer, which it's interesting because all three are in my working environment right now. I mean, they're all three getting used in different ways. So
I think that fits your use case a lot. It wouldn't ever fit mine because I never, you know, had to go on calls like that. But for you, I can't see you living without.
I've got a small sling bag that I throw things into, and this goes into that. And it's the less that I have to carry, or the lighter I can make my load. You know, it's funny, even being able to have gone from the technical, carrying all my technical books, to being able to carry the iPad 12.9 was a huge win. Mm-hmm. And now being able to carry things in a smaller thing, at least for smaller things. If I have to read a technical document on this smaller iPad mini, I can only do it for so long. It's a little too small for some of the technical documents, short of zooming and shrinking and all that kind of thing. But for the basic stuff, for, you know, just reading something quickly that I have to scan or something that I got from somebody, it's fine. And it's perfectly good. And it's very small and worth the trade-off to me in terms of the space versus the weight versus everything else. So
my wife had the first gen iPad mini. She loved hers. She's since graduated to, well, first I got her the 2017 iPad. And then that one, actually I still have that somewhere. But then she went to a refurbished iPad Pro last year.
Oh, gotcha.
Which not the recent one. It's the one that looks a little bit more like the old iPad used to.
Well, I do like the newer ones, and the Mini supports the second generation pencil, which I actually do like because you charge it off the side of the device, and this does charge off the side of the iPad Mini as well. So, it's... Very
wait a minute. Did you say the iPad Mini's got the magnet for the pen?
It does. Yep. And it uses the second generation pencil, not the first generation. And yes, you just set it on the side and it charges. It absolutely does. So it's got enough of the bells and whistles to make me happy. And yet they kept the cost. I'm going to say they kept the cost down, but obviously we all know we can buy cheap tablets out there. But we're not ones that we're necessarily going to be happy with, but but this one, you know, I mean, you can get in at $500 and another, you know, $100 or so for your pencil, and you got a pretty good portable device for sketching or note taking or whatever you're going to do out there. And you can put a SIM card in it if you want to pay another $150, $200, whatever it is for the SIM version. But it's all there. I mean, you got your feature sets there, which is kind of interesting in a nice package. Like I said, big enough and small enough for a lot of cases. And I didn't think there was a time a few years ago, I didn't expect that to be the case for me, but it's turned out to be an interesting case for me. I've had to change my mind.
Our needs change.
They do. And speaking of needs changing, I've got a pick for this week. It is the Mokin USB-C hub with triple display. And this is a $57 USB-C based port replicator, basically. All right. It's got 14 different ports, including two USB-C, one USB 2, two HDMI ports, and then four USB 3 ports. Looks like another USB 2, and then one SD and one micro SD slot on the other side. It also has a wired 3.5 inch audio jack as well as a VGA and gigabit Ethernet port. I got something like this for use when I go downtown to my consulting company's office. They've got open seating and no assigned seats. So you look for something when you're there, and they've got keyboards and mice and HDMI monitors. And if you want to be able to go ahead and just, you know, put your displays where you've got them, or your computer where you've got it, and be able to connect everything up. If you don't have something like this with you, it kind of make, and you don't have the right kind of ports on your machine, you're going to be hurting, or you're going to be carrying a lot of dongles. All right. And I don't dongle. I don't like carrying all that other extra crap. One of these is just fine. So
I've been looking for one of these, and now I'm going to get it, because I'm just looking at this one, Chris. It is awesome.
Yeah.
Be careful about what it's compatible with, though.
No, this one does work with both Windows and Mac.
Oh, really? Because the description in Amazon doesn't say that.
I thought it did. But
no. Matter of fact, and somebody later on asks if it works on an iPad Pro 12.9, and they say no.
Well, there you go.
Oh. So,
but I don't see how or why this wouldn't. It just uses USB-C. So we're going to give that a shot. And if it don't work,
how does it handle being loaded up? Because a lot of them get really warm.
They get warm. They do. It gets warm if you've got it loaded up. But I'm not going to have a lot on this. I wanted to be able to have the ports available. If it needed it, there is a USB C port here that does power in as well. So if you've got too much on this and it's not drawing enough power, you can power it if you wish. So it's kind of one of the reasons why I grabbed this one, was because it did have a way of doing a USB-C power in. So we'll see how it goes. But this one looked really, really nice, and it's reasonably priced at $57 or so. I think it was $56.94, rounding up. So, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see how it really works, and if it does
work. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of these, they look good on paper, but when you actually try to implement them, they don't.
Right. No, I get that.
After you've used it for a while,
I'll be more curious. I get that. Initially, I was fine. I just had two USB-C, or not USB-C, two USB-based peripherals, keyboard and a mouse on it, was just fine. So
okay.
I have one that I use that I load up pretty heavily, and
right.
it works, but I would be afraid to put much more on it. Right.
That's my thing too, because I'm gonna be upgrading to a MacBook Pro 16-inch M1 variety. Now the company will let me purchase a Thunderbolt dock, and their recommended one right now is the Thunderbolt 3 Express Dock HD, which will run dual 4K displays. And it has 85-watt power supply from Belkin, and that's $350.
Right.
So
they get up there really fast.
They do.
If they won't let me buy that, then this would be an easy purchase right here.
And it's not going to hurt.
And this is USB-C, right. So you got to understand, with all these ports, USB-C is going to have a lot of trouble talking to all these ports if you loaded them all up at the same time.
Yes.
Because that's just a limitation of the technology, not of the particular device.
And that's why Thunderbolt might be a better choice. But yeah,
for some people, there's a lot of give and take with these things. So I'm going to be really curious. Because I'm always looking for a better one, you know, because mine gets really warm, and I wish I had more ports. But can I go more ports? I don't know. You know,
that's like I have a couple.
That's the problem.
I have a couple of those USB-C only hubs slash dock. Like one of them does have Ethernet on it. The reason I bought those was because back when I had my Note 10 Plus, I had picked up a. I'm trying to remember the name of this. The company's gone.
Chris, you raised one good point that's important with these devices, and this one has it, is the ability to feed power into it.
Yes, and that was important, because
It's huge.
It is. It is. And I want to point out that, you know, with some USB-C docks or port replicators, there are compatibility related issues. Chris, you and I had,
we've had quite a few over the years.
Yes. Yeah. A while back I had sent you one and it didn't quite work out.
No, no, it didn't.
Unfortunately, that may have that. And that was a powered dock.
It was intermittent. It would go for a while and then it would like reset itself.
Yep.
And that was primarily a power draw issue.
Yep.
It couldn't handle the draw of my laptop is what it couldn't do.
Sure. And that's why I wanted to make certain that at least the one that I got the
powered one,
you know,
I'm using one from Kingston these days, the Nucleum model. And I've been pretty happy with that. But I'm always looking for something better, right?
I wanted something portable. I wanted something portable and something.
Yeah, me that too. That's why I've got this.
And just go with and the Moken does that. And for $57, it wasn't bad.
No, that's a good price.
Well, it looks good on paper.
Well,
it
does. Even if it's not everything. I mean, you know, even if there's things like I saw some comments that it says it's going to do 4K at 60, but it really only does it as 30. A lot of times that's the limitation of the laptop or whatever you're driving from. It's not specifically about the device.
Correct.
And there's a lot of confusion and you just kind of have, the sad thing with these things is you have to kind of try them in your own situation.
Yeah.
You do.
Because it's always different.
It is. Your mileage may vary depending on what you're driving from.
And people will want to fuss at the vendor, but it's not always the vendor's fault. I mean,
correct.
It's all about how different people implemented the standard. And if they didn't implement it the same way, you know, if Apple implemented it one way and you're trying to use it with Apple and they're trying to do it a different way, you run into a challenge or something like that. These things are not unusual. And again, I think it's really cool. It's got a lot of ports. This thing has a lot of ports. And quite frankly, 14. I'm thinking about trying it myself. But with the understanding, it may not meet all my needs. It might not, but it might. And these are hard. And so if you can find one that you're liking and it works well for you, hey, this is a good thing, guys.
Yep.
It's a really good thing.
True. So that is, as they say, it for this edition of the iTech Gear Weekly. Unfortunately, Larry, you don't have a pick for us tonight.
Oh, but I'll have an expensive one probably next time.
Oh, there we go.
Whew, I was worried.
Yeah, you had us worried there for a minute, Larry, but now I feel redeemed.
I do.
It'll be worth two picks.
There you go. Awesome. Awesome. But as I said, kids, that is the end of this week's bi-weekly episode of the iTech Gear Weekly, episode number 18, Great Googly Moogly, recorded live Sunday, May 15th, 2022.
Dad, can I get a med for that?
I'm Christopher Sparrow.
Send me the sound clip on that. I want the sound clip on that.
Great Googly Moogly.
That's my new ringtone.
Yes. Great Googly Moogly. And for Chris Cavula, Joel McLaughlin, and Larry McJunkin, I'm Christopher Sparrow, guys. Yeah, everybody have a great week.
Yeah.